Welcome to Influential Entrepreneurs, bringing you interviews with elite business leaders and experts, sharing tips and strategies for elevating your business to the next level. Here's your host, Mike Saunders.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Influential Entrepreneurs. This is Mike Saunders, the Authority Positioning Coach. Today we have with us Burge Erakelian, who is the Area Sales Manager with CMG Home Loans. Burge, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
Hey, so I'm looking forward to talking with you and seeing what you're doing in the industry and how you serve your clients. But I always love to ask, what was it in your background that one day made you go, you know what, I need to get into the mortgage banking industry? What was it that was the trigger for you?
Well, I would say back in about 2012, I had just wrapped up a business that I was working on completely separate from the industry. Several of my friends were in the financial industry, and I ended up opening a mortgage broker with a friend of mine, and he was licensed, and I was on the sidelines doing the marketing, the hiring, bringing in clients and serving them. So it really got me wanting to learn more and do more in the mortgage business, and ended up when I moved to San Diego, I got my license and started serving families.
So you've used the word twice now, serving. And so that makes me think relationships, right? Because the worst thing in the world is to go to 1-800-MORTGAGE, which I don't even know if that's a company, but the concept of like just being another number. Oh, next. Here's your loan. Next. You develop relationships because that's how you serve your clients, because so many times people come to buy a home or refinance their home, and it's a very long, complicated process if you don't understand it. And, you know, it's not like we do it every other day or every other month. It's very infrequent. So even if you have a home and you had a mortgage, you forget some of the steps. So talk a little bit about how you work with and help your clients understand the process so that they feel like they're understanding every single step of the way.
Sure. Yeah. Most people are, you know, they have some financial literacy up to a certain point, and then, you know, money is money for them. So they do these transactions maybe several times in their life. You know, you buy a home a couple of times, refinance a couple of times. So I'm here to kind of help them along in that process, work with them to make sure that they're 100% ready for it and that we'll have a successful outcome. I think a big part of my job is getting to understand and know the client, what's important to them, why they're doing this, what their financial position is, and work with that. And then let them know any inadequacies or anything that they could be lagging on so that we can have a successful outcome.
And sometimes it's just, you know, here's what to expect. Here, you know, you're going to, you know, see this and be asked this, and this is going to come up here. And sometimes it is a little bit laborious to go through that. But if you expect it, then it's not a shock. So I think that's a big piece for people to realize is, boy, if you're being told here's the next step and what's going to be coming down the pike, that just helps clarify things so much for people rather than getting taken by surprise.
Yeah, it's a 30 to 45 day journey. Just the loan process, let alone how long it takes them to find a home too.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you mentioned finding a home. Obviously when you know, are in the mortgage industry, you can do all kinds of loans, home improvement loans, second mortgages, refinance if your rate is higher. But, what's the market look like right now, in your area? To where is it mostly refinance? Is it mostly purchase, or is it a good mix of the two?
Right now I'm mostly purchase, which is most of my business anyway. I work with families that are looking to buy homes and realtors and stuff like that, you know, it's all basically purchases. So I'll do some refinances when somebody that I've worked with in the past needs to lower their rate or get some cash out. That's when I'll work on that. I don't go seeking the refinances.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be periodic based on what the interest rates are. Right. So if the rates are low, high, or all in between, that's going to, and sometimes maybe the rates have ticked up a little bit, but someone just needs that cash for some purpose. So they're going to need that. But on the purchase side of things, do you find yourself working with first time home buyers, a lot? exclusively, or is it just part of the mix? Because that's a whole different kind of buyer, because they might not qualify for as much as a second time buyer. They might not have as much down payment. So talk about some of those nuances.
Yeah, I work with a good mix of individuals and families that are both first time, second, third, or downsizing, even buying investment properties as they're building their real estate wealth, as I feel like I'm more of a personal wealth advisor sometimes. And the first time home buyer is unique in their sense of, you know, they're just starting out most of the time. Their down payment might be a little bit lower than someone that just sold their home. And we have plenty of programs for these first time home buyers. And I really enjoy working with them because they're having fun throughout the process of finding the home. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, how am I going to get this loan approved? And I want to have fun with them doing that part because I can make it enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, it really, it's like the other aspect is the pre-planning, because if someone is looking to buy a home for the first time or not, but buy a home, what is the price range I need to stick in? Because if I start looking at a home that is well above my price range that I can't afford, now I got my hopes up for that size house, that location, that type of house. And then, oh, and now I can't do that. So I got to go down. So working with someone like yourself ahead of time to get pre-approved, now it's going to set the right expectation.
Yeah, I firmly agree. It's always best to start with the mortgage person and go from there. A lot of people do start with the realtor and they're like, yeah, I need $1 million house. And then when I tell them their payment is $6,000 a month, they're like, okay, I need a $500,000 house. Yeah. You know, or what can I buy? So I like to work with them and just figure out how we can get to their goal, you know?
Yes. And that's a huge, huge part because, you know, the internet is so accessible and, oh, look at that listing and look at this and look at that neighborhood. And would it be nice if, but it's like a punch to the gut when you go, oh, well, now I got to go down a few notches. And so, yes, starting with the money first. So talk about a little bit about the difference between a pre-qualification and a pre-approval, because you might have that pre-qualification in your hand, so to speak, or digitally, and you go out and you look at the bigger house and then, you know, the underwriter didn't quite look close enough and we still need to take it down a couple notches for the approval. So what's the significance between the two?
Sure. Absolutely. So the pre-approval differs from a pre-qualification in such. The pre-qual, if you go online and you just enter a little bit of information, you literally can hit a button and get a pre-qualification letter.
Yeah.
You can even call me. We can discuss it and I can give you a pre-qualification letter, which means just that we discussed things, but we didn't verify things. So right. With the pre-approval, that's where we verify. I am verifying your income, verifying your employment, verifying your assets. Then I take all that. And that gives me a really good idea if I will give you a pre-approval letter before I give it to my underwriter. Right. If they, you know, you want to go shopping that weekend and you need it right here and now, I would know because I would run it all through my system with an app and I would have a great idea. But the next step would be to get it to that underwriter so that we can close in like 2 weeks or less.
Because just hearing the fact that, oh, I make X number of dollars and you pull credit and the credit score is whatever the number is, that's all fine and good. But when it comes down to show me your pay stubs and your tax returns, your W-2s, well, that amount you told me, yeah, that might be the case, but you didn't mention the fact that you're self-employed and we can't count all that income. Or you didn't mention the fact that you have a major percentage of income that's overtime and the underwriter's having a problem with. So seeing the actual documentation to get that pre-approval is critical.
Correct. Yes.
So what are some of the things that you've run into? Maybe can you think of an example where you're like, ooh, hey, listen, this came up and it could be a roadblock, but here's how we need to overcome it. You know, like for instance, you know, there's a lot of times that, you know, the self-employed borrower, you know, sometimes thinks, well, I can't do anything because I write off a lot of stuff for my taxes, but then I can't ever borrow money. So do you have some ways that underwriters can still approve a loan and maybe you can show alternate income, that kind of thing?
Correct. Yes, absolutely. So a couple of quick examples. One would, let's just go with a W-2 borrower that all of a sudden this, you know, last 6 months has been working a ton of overtime and, oh, I make $10,000 a month, you know, these last 6 months. Well, we go back 2 years. So they're going to average, if you use a lot of overtime one year and not the previous, it's going to be very difficult for us to use that because we don't know if it's going to continue for the next 3 years, which is a underwriting requirement. So that throws off a lot of people when they're making a W-2 wage. So that's why it's important for me to analyze the income up front so that we know what you're going to be approved for and you're house shopping for the proper home and not something that you can't afford and now you wasted your time. Another example is self-employed. So with self-employed borrowers, they think they make $20,000 a month and then they write everything off and their tax return shows zero, for example. Yeah. You're like, yeah, but I make $20,000.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I know you do, but you're not paying Uncle Sam a penny. So he's not going to allow you to use all of that income that you think you're making. And the underwriter won't accept it. But we do have like a bank statement program. We do have a stated income program. Okay. The rates are a little bit higher with these, but what's the trade-off? Do you want to pay a lot in taxes or are you okay with paying a little bit in payment, which in reality,
talk to your tax preparer. But if the payment's a little higher because the rate's a little higher, that still is tax deductible. So that benefits you that way.
It is. Correct.
It's a really good point. And you know, Uncle Sam, you know, you're going to tell him I'm a pauper, but you want the underwriter to think I'm a, you know, king. So, you know, pick one. You can't have it both ways. But, and even on the bank statements, you know, you might say, here's 2 or 3 years of bank statements, and that's wonderful. You know, look, I put all that, you know, $200,000 a year in my bank account, but they still can't count every dime of it because there still is risk. So what's the percentage of the bank statements that the underwriters will allow you to count?
So generally speaking, it's 50% of whatever the deposits are. Okay. But then with a CPA letter, we can get up to 90% of it.
Okay.
We've got our tips and tricks if you're working with me.
Yeah. And that's a really good point because, you know, you watch on Shark Tank where someone goes, hey, we made $1 million last year in revenues. And they're like, oh, my word, that's amazing. But then it comes out that they had $1.2 million in expenses. Well, you lost money. So that $1 million doesn't really mean so much. So if you have, you know, whatever it is going through the banking at $200,000, but you have so much in expenses that are going out, well – maybe 50% is very generous. Maybe if you do work with the CPA and go, yeah, but some of the cost of goods sold are this, or maybe we can add back in getting with someone like Burge who can say, okay, I've seen this, been there, done that. Here's what we need to get your accountant to, or show me this. And now we can go to our underwriter and really paint a good picture and really get you the most possible.
That's the whole name of the game. And that's what I do best is painting the picture up front.
Yeah. Because you know what? The worst time in the world is to think we're going to slip one by the underwriter and then now you're a week before closing and everything collapses and you're trying to play catch up and nobody likes to be under the gun from the transaction side as well as the underwriters certainly would not appreciate that. So why don't we go ahead of time and go, hey, this we're trying to get approved. We're not under contract even yet, but how can we get this borrower approved? And now everyone can look at it with a level head and underwriters appreciate that. And you know what? Sorry, but the underwriter is the one putting the rubber stamp on it going, yep, it's approved. So we have to comply with what they can allow, which in reality, you know, fits into those federal guidelines anyway. So you really need to know where those checks and balances are.
Yeah. And you'll notice too, sometimes a lot of loan officers that have these bigger teams, they'll talk to you that first conversation. And then after that, you're being passed down their pipeline and with other junior loan officers, processors, assistants. And if the picture wasn't developed properly up front, and those other people that jump into this loan to get it done don't understand what to do and how to finish it, they could drop the ball somewhere, but by accident as well, like not on purpose, but just didn't know, oh, shoot, we were doing this. Somebody forgot to mention it or didn't know. Whereas with me, I'm kind of walking through the whole process and I keep my toe in there all the time to make sure everybody's doing the way we want our picture to be painted so that we have a successful outcome.
it's kind of like that old game you played as a kid or whatever, what called telephone, and you whisper something in someone's ear and they whisper to the next person, and nine people down the road, you say it out loud and everyone laughs because it's like, how did it get to be that different? Well, the more cooks in the kitchen or hands involved in there, you know, Birch might have been really on it and started developing that relationship to really understand things, but something can get lost in translation, and having someone with your experience that works with them all the way through. Yes, there's going to be processors, but if Burge is the point of contact and you've seen problems and solved them in the past and you see how to fix things, that's a leg up from the competition, I would suspect.
Yeah, I agree. Because also in that, it could just be a document that's being asked for that the borrower is just like, oh yeah, here you go. But if they don't have like a little bit of intuition or insight from me to verify, hey, what are you sending to them? Let me see it first.
Yeah.
To approve it. You know, once you send it over, it's over.
And Pandora's box has been opened, and the underwriter now goes, oh, well.
Yeah. If I see it, it's still hidden.
Yeah.
We can correct it. If it gets too far, yeah, then it's, you know, it's not correctable.
And that's why I feel like, you know, let's clarify something too, Birch. That's not an unethical thing you just said. It because like if I see it, it's invisible. We're not withholding things. It's just that there are sometimes where if you give the underwriter too much stuff, they're obligated to then ask for 19 more, you know, things because of this one thing that we submitted. So it's not like we're trying to get around things or be unethical. It's just, you know, where, you know, to keep straight down the lane, stay in your lane without causing more documentation or headaches.
Yeah, that's the main part of it is one question could lead you to another. And sometimes people think that they have to tell them everything, but you just need to stay in the, like you said, stay in your lane. This is what they asked for. Just tell them this and that's it. Let's make sure we stick to the script and go from there. Because
you so talk a little bit about, again, whether it's first-time home buyer or any kind of purchase transaction, it really doesn't matter, because once you are educating and helping people understand each step along the way, it's just a smooth process if it's done the right way. What are some of the things once the loan is approved, and what are some of the steps moving forward that could cause hiccups that you've seen in the past that you now can fix? Like as an example, like, oh, well, we need to make sure we have a home inspection or an appraisal, and here's some of the things to watch out for, or the title company needs, or they found a lien or a thing on credit. What are some of the hiccups that you can foresee that you can help your clients avoid?
So I always, in a purchase deal, I always send out my appraisal to-do list to the seller, to the realtor, just so everybody knows this is what we look for, whether it's an FHA loan, a VA loan, a conventional loan, because they each have their little nuances. Yeah. So I like to do that up front so that, oh, this house could never be FHA approved, right? If they tell me that up front, well, now I know that I need to go a different route and we don't go FHA, right? Other things is large cash deposits. People put in their bank accounts thinking like, oh, okay, yeah, I need 50 grand as a down payment. Here, mom, give me 10. I'm going to throw it in my bank. Well, now all of a sudden the underwriter's wondering where you got all this cash from, and they think you're Pablo Escobar or something, you know? So you have to watch all that as well. I think a couple other things throughout the process would be, large deposits.
What about gifts from relatives? Like you mentioned, you know, you might see a big old deposit in the bank account. The underwriter wants to know what it is. When is it okay to get a large gift from a relative?
Yeah, so they'll FHA, conventional, VA, they all allow for gifts. So as long as we set it up the right way. So a gift would come in, and generally we'd like to send it directly to escrow. Conventional, you don't have to show them where the gift came from. You just have to say, oh, it came from my mom, and that's it. Whereas like FHA and VA, they like to source it. So they want to see mom's bank account as well to make sure she didn't get a large deposit from somebody to hand down to you.
Wow.
Yeah. So you know, little things like that that we can set up for up front. Another thing is seasoning of funds too. You know, like you need 60 days seasoning. And if you don't have that, just because you put cash in there and you can't source it, then maybe we go with a lender that needs only 30-day seasonings, or we wait.
Yes, wait. And let's talk about wait for a second. What about for the first-time home buyer that you pull credit and go, hey, guys, we got a big old problem because, look, here's a credit score that's lower than we needed. Here's a collection. Here is whatever the case is. It's not no right now. It's just we got to do some work. So what are some of the things you help them do during that time they're waiting?
Yeah, so during the time that they're waiting, it depends on what is off on the credit. So sometimes it's as simple as paying down some debt. Sometimes it's as simple as adding an authorized user account to kind of boost that credit score, as long as that authorized user account is in good standing. Sometimes they have to work with a credit company that I work with to quickly get things taken off, like collections, because sometimes if you pay off a collection, it's actually bad for your credit. Wow. So you want to make sure that you don't just go out and do it whatever you think is right. You want to talk to an expert like myself that understands credit and knows what should be done and what shouldn't be done.
Yes. Well, I tell you, having someone that has seen the process, knows where to navigate through is worth its weight in gold. And I think with the things we've talked about, some of these little things with seasoning and source of funds and all these things, it kind of makes people go, okay, let me just, you know, do all the work up front and to make sure it's nice and stress-free as we move forward. So I just love how you work with your clients. If someone is listening to this thinking, well, maybe let me talk to you and see what you can do for me, what's the best way they can reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, the best way is just call me on my cell phone. It's 858-449-0514. You can always text me first and email is great, but the best thing to do is just give me a call.
Well, Birch, thank you so much for coming on. It was a real pleasure talking with you today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike.
You've been listening to Influential Entrepreneurs with Mike Saunders. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.influentialentrepreneursradio.com.